I'm Flamey Grant, the shame slaying, hip swaying, singing, songwriting drag queen, and I felt like this podcast needed a little bit of sparkle, so let's do it.
Welcome, everybody, to episode. I don't know what it is.
Come on.
I've had to do this quickly. I've had it thrust on me. Episode 309 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page and there is Joe Davis.
Hello.
Hello.
Listen, it needed to be right because we may have more than 17 listeners to this one. We could have, I don't know, up to 20?
Oh, do you think we've peaked?
I think we might have done.
Yeah. No, because this podcast may be slightly longer than normal, I ought to warn you. It's also probably a lot more interesting than normal because we have an interview with Flamey Grant.
We do.
Which is really lovely. Fascinating interview that Joe's done. And we'll come to that in a minute. But it occurs to us that we may be getting some fans in of Flamey. Aren't familiar with this podcast, and heaven knows why would you be. So welcome to everybody who's come. That's lovely. If you're here for the first time, warm welcome. Perhaps in the tradition of evangelical churches, you'd like to stand up and give your testimony. That would be lovely.
Yeah, and we're going to take up an offering now.
Yeah. And also one of our stewards will be around very, very quickly with a sign-up form for direct
standing orders.
Standing orders, yeah. So, no, you're welcome. This is a podcast, I think, for all Christians who are struggling with aspects of their faith or who are, as we call it, spiritually decluttering, really.
Yeah. And I think for anyone who's gone to church, perhaps for the 1,000th time and gone, is this it? You know?
Yes, indeed.
There must be more. And also you're struggling with images of the divine, you know, maybe, you know, God's turned out to be, you know, angry all the time with you. And you just think, can this be right?
Yeah. Which is not to say he might not have a point in being angry with you, but let's assume not at this stage.
Without knowing you, it's hard to say.
It's hard to tell, isn't it? Anyway, so we're going to have that interview in a minute, and it's really well worth a listen. But first, as is traditional now in these podcasts, I don't think there are any church notices.
I don't think we are, except the watch out for the upcoming home group.
Oh, there we go. So, how are you?
I went to see Paddington, of course, the latest Paddington in Peru. I mean, we're not going to compare it to Paddington 2. We know we're not going to do that because Paddington 2 is the perfect film and there's only one way to go. But it was lovely to spend an evening in the company of all those characters again. And Olivia Colman did a lovely job as the all-singing nun.
Oh, wonderful.
And it was a lot of fun. So that was great. Other than that, I feel a bit croaky. Cause,
you do. You sound a bit croaky.
Know, well, I'm trying to do full Barry White.
Yeah. Hey.
So, you know, I'm fighting off a cold. But there you go. Who isn't nowadays, really? So.
Well, let's pray it doesn't develop into man flu.
No, exactly. We're very serious.
Wouldn't want that.
Yeah. No, but I'm all right. And I absolutely am loving, genuinely loving listening to Flamey Grant's albums. Particularly
Great.
Church. It's just outstandingly good. I will say more later, I'm sure. But how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, not much to report. I've been building a shed, as is my wont. You know, I do that from now and again, and then sometimes write books about them. And then last night I went to see Little Alex Horn.
Oh, excellent.
The final night of his tour, the Horn Section tour. So he was quite rogue, actually. I think he went off-piste quite a lot, yes,
okay.
Judging by the band's reactions.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was so joyous and silly humour and just fun. And if you get a chance to see them in concert, really do that. That's great. But apart from that, no, I'm okay. Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm good.
Good.
So we should get on really because this is a packed podcast. So tell us a little bit about this interview. Set it up and tell us how it came about.
Well, it started last year actually. Someone wrote in, sent me a video, music video, Flamey, and said, "Have you seen this? It's outstanding." And I watched it and absolutely loved it. Then and then I tried to get an interview with Flamey, but I wasn't getting much joy. Then post Greenbelt, we'd had a few listeners, at least two or three of the 17, saying it'd be great if you could interview Flamey sometime. Mm. And beloved listener Tim was in conversation with Flamey, and so set up a kind of three-way email and introduced us. Some UK listeners will know Flamey from Greenbelt because they led the worship at the worship service for the communion this year. And I think they made a lot of fans doing that. Absolutely no doubt about it. So it was just wonderful to spend time in Flamey's company talking about their life and hearing a bit about their story.
Well, friends, we've got a real treat for you today. I am delighted to welcome to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast the award-winning and Billboard charting artist, the fabulous Flamey Grant. Flamey, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's absolutely delightful to be here.
I am so happy you are here. I've been listening nonstop to the Church album. And I've got to tell you, man, I'm such a fan now. I'm telling everyone, you've got to listen to this. My daughter loves it. She thinks it's crazy good. Thank you so much for that. For those that have never heard of Flamey Grant, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure thing. Well, thank you, first of all, for listening to the record. I really appreciate it. You're the one stream I've got coming out of the UK. Excellent. I actually do okay in the UK. UK folks are fabulous to
well,
me.
Well, so. You made a lot of friends doing Greenbelt, I can tell you that. Yeah. If I had a quid for every person who said to me, the star of Greenbelt this year was Flamey, just loved it. Yeah.
Wow. I'm so honored. It was an incredible weekend. Backtracking, I like to call myself the shame-slaying, hip-swaying, singing, songwriting drag queen, because every drag queen needs a good tagline, and beautiful. That's mine. I'm born and raised in the Appalachian Mountains of Western North Carolina, and kind of moved out to California in my 20s and 30s, and lived out there for I lived out west almost for 20 years, and then the past year I've moved back to my hometown outside of Asheville, North Carolina.
Wow.
And so I'm back in the southeast of the US. Oh. And doing my drag and doing my concerts and touring, and it's quite an experience, I must say. I'm what we call a late in life drag queen, and that's just kind of it's kind of like a late in life lesbian, except instead of cutting your hair, you add more. I started drag in my late 30s, really because of pandemic. Because I had been interested in the art form for a long time, but with pandemic, you know, I suddenly found myself, as we all did, with lots of extra time on my hands. And I spent that time, filled that time by watching YouTube makeup tutorials and really just starting to practice the art of drag, and then from there it really was just kind of a snowball rolling down the hill, it just picking up steam the whole way. I never really intended or anticipated that there was a career in this for me, but now it is my full-time job, and I'm a singer-songwriter who does it in drag, and I play all over the country, and now a little bit internationally, thanks to Greenbelt and Graceland in the Netherlands and some shows in Canada. So slowly working my way outside the States. But I have a lot of fun, and I take a lot of heat, and I love both of those things.
I'll talk to you about the heat in a minute. But how did you first get into music? Tell us the story there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm just from a family that always sang. You know, my mom is a singer and a piano player. She played piano in our church growing up, and she and her sisters would just always have four-part harmony going at family reunions and things like that. So we were just, I don't ever remember learning to sing. I just like came into the world singing, and never really took any formal training other than, you know, I did chorus and choir and things like that in school, and wrote my first song when I was 9 years old. It was very much a modeled after the hymns that we would like praise choruses we would sing in church. That was I was really only allowed to listen to Christian music growing up until later in high school. So that was what I loved. I loved 90s CCM, contemporary Christian music, and Amy Grant was obviously the queen of that world. Yeah. So she was my diva. All my other friends and you know, gay boys who came up in my generation, you know, loved like Britney and maybe older artists like Cher and Madonna. And I just wasn't aware or, you know, I didn't have that stuff. I had Amy. So
you landed on Amy. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. When it came time to come up with a drag name, that was the little pun I went with. But yeah, I learned to play guitar in high school pretty much just so that I could accompany myself as I wrote songs. I was tired of writing basically poems and then giving them to my friend who played piano. She would put them to music, and I was tired of waiting on her. So I was like, I'm just going to learn to play an instrument myself so I can write the music as well as the lyrics. And yeah, so I've been writing songs since the age of 9 and playing guitar since high school. And lo and behold, when I started drag in pandemic, it just kind of made sense for me to put the two together. And that's how that all.
And am I right in thinking you were worship leader in your home church?
Yeah. I was not in my home church. My home church was a weird little culty culty congregation. The official designation is Plymouth Brethren.
Oh wow!
Extremely very culty, extremely patriarchal. You know, women cover their hair and aren't allowed to speak and that sort of thing. So we didn't even have pastors in our church. You know, it was just like men, people with if you had a penis, you were a leader. Like that was how it works. So that was an interesting thing to navigate as a queer kid, a closeted queer kid, and someone who would later you know, learn to embrace my own non-binary identity. But from high school, I started, you know, playing guitar I went to a Christian high school, so we had chapels, and I would play guitar there, and then same thing in college. And from there, I really just kind of followed the wind wherever it took me when it came to leading music in church. But yeah, for 22 years, I was in some way, shape or form a worship leader, a music leader in various churches or religious settings. And most recently, that was in a church in San Diego, where I was, it was a church plant that lasted for about 8.5 years and then was kind of a casualty of pandemic. And it was a really lovely, progressive, affirming space. And so I led worship there for 8.5 years. And that's where some of the songs that are now Flamey's songs actually got written when I was a worship leader in that space. So, yeah.
Yeah. And tell me about that. What was it like? You talked about being a closeted, you know, queer kid, but how was it sort of coming out within that sort of religious, you know, kind of dome that we tend to live in at that point of our lives? What was that like?
It was challenging as hell. You know, my coming out process, I like to say it took a decade. It was most of my 20s. Because initially my first coming out in quotation marks was just telling a couple close friends that I, you know, struggled with same-sex attraction. I couldn't even say the word gay. Like I was so afraid of I was afraid. You know, the fear had been deeply instilled in me from my youngest memories that you know, I had a role to play as, again, a person who had been born male. Like there's a lot of expectations on what that looks like and the role I play in the world and in the church. And, you know, I knew that this was going to be a volatile thing for me. So when I first came out, it was very much couched in language of like, you know, I know it's a sin and I'm going to, you know, I want to change. It's my struggle. It's not who I am. You know, those kinds of things. And, you know, I went through conversion therapy. I self-enrolled in conversion therapy for 5 years through the Exodus program, you know, which is now defunct, thankfully. And you know, there were all kinds of just like stages along that way. You know, at one point I got hired as a worship leader at a church in Reno, Nevada for a couple years. And before I let them hire me, I told them that, you know, basically that same thing. I was like, this is my struggle. This is what I, you know, and I feel like you all have a right to know this intimate detail of my life. If you're going to put me on payroll, which is such an interesting, odd, way to think. So they had, you know, they assigned me a accountability pastor buddy, you know, that I had to meet with every week to make sure I wasn't stumbling and that sort of thing. And so, and then I got kicked out of another church because I, you know, reached a point where I was like, I've tried the conversion therapy, like it's not changing, y'all, and I'm tired of feeling miserable and wasting my time with that, you know, putting my energy into that. Instead, I'm just going to be, I'm going to commit to be, I'm going to be gay and say I'm gay. I just am, but I'll be single and celibate, and that's the choice I'll make because I want to like retain my place in this world, this Christendom, and that wasn't enough for one of the churches. They still kicked me out. Yeah, even though, you know, I was
there's a lovely, gracious, kind,
I know, kind of right,
loving response there.
Yeah, and then the next stop was a church that I started in San Diego with a small team. We were a church plant team, and that was the church where I really kind of reckoned with who I am and came to terms over the course of 5 years in that community. Really kind of came out and was like, I'm queer. I have now looked into what the Bible has to say about this and what we've been taught that the Bible says versus what it actually is saying and all of that. So, you know, I came to the point where I was like, it's okay. I can be gay. I can date. I can be in same sex relationships. And then I got kicked out of that church as well. So it was a,
you know once very... was enough for me, but I admire your stamina.
Yeah. Well, it's not that it's honest. It's not stamina. It's sadly, it's the indoctrination that I was brought up in. And I just genuinely believed there was not going to be a place for me in the world if I didn't adhere to these criteria. And I was afraid of that. And so for a long time, I lived in fear and I lived in shame. And that is why Shame Slayer is part of my little tagline, because it's...
Listen, that sounds like a great Marvel comic hero to me.
Oh, let's call them up. I will gladly sell them the rights to my story.
But fabulous than Iron Man.
Yes, I love it.
That would be great. My sense listening to your albums, forgive my ignorance, there's two albums or there's lots of albums. I've only done two, so, you know, let me just say that.
Two full-length albums, okay, Bible Belt Baby and Church, and then a handful of singles smattered in between.
Yeah, and some music videos as well, right? Which are worth a watch. Indeed. I enjoyed them very much indeed.
Oh, thank you.
My sense listening to music, I mean, you talk about that period of, well, you know, I could be in church and I'm celibate. My sense is that you've used your music to tell your story. And so there's a track, is it Hard to See Me Happy? Is that the
track?
And I mean, man, I mean, some of your songs, I mean, you're on that album, for example, you've got those kind of, you know, banging tunes like Old Time Religion and Do It for the Song. And then you've got these absolutely gut-wrenching, heartbreaking songs. And I want to ask you about some of those things. Can I read some lyrics to you? Is that weird?
Absolutely. No, see, not at all.
Sometimes I interview authors and I read bits of their book to them. And I think that must be weird. Now I'm going to quote your song to you.
Oh, I don't think it's... I imagine that almost any author or songwriter who has their stuff read back to them is highly flattered, as I am right now. So thank you.
Okay. I'll just put a little warning here. Don't weep, listeners. This is from If You Ever Leave. And you say this: so if we get to heaven and Jesus stops us at the gates, if he calls our love transgression and says I didn't die for gays, don't lose hope. I will take your hand in mine, I'll pull you close, and with my other hand I'll give that God a sign. Gladly walk away from him, we're better off in sin if he doesn't let us in. I'd fight to see you leave your shame, and I think God would do the same.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you ought to win a literary award for that, my friend. But
thank you. Wow.
Listen, what's the story? This is what the question. One of the questions I really want to ask you. What's the story there?
Yeah. Well, it's all kind of in response to the crazy experience I've had over the past couple of years, where, you know, I stumbled into drag a little bit, and then I stumbled into mixing drag in my songwriting, and then I stumbled into Christian music and drag. You know, none of this was particularly planned. It certainly was not planned. If it was, I'm a terrible planner. It just kind of all happened. And so I ended up finding myself in this role that in some ways makes so much sense when I look back on my life and just the experiences I've had. It makes sense that that this is the work I would be doing. And at the same time, I never really wanted to be like identified as the Christian drag queen. That wasn't the goal. And yet I recognize the value in having some representation in that space. And there's not much, right? There's not much queer representation in Christian music. And when there is, those folks tend to get ostracized or cast out or, relegated to the fringes. And as I am as well, and I'm not like widely embraced in as far as the industry goes, but there are plenty of people who appreciate what I'm doing and what other artists like Jennifer Knapp and Trey Pearson and some other queer artists who've come out Semler over the past few years are doing in that space, because there obviously always have been, always will be queer kids coming up in Christianity, and we know what that's like. I know intimately what it is like to be that kid, and I can only imagine what it could have done for me, the difference it could have made to see a happy, healthy, whole queer life being lived boldly and bravely and joyfully, in the space where I was, right? Because I didn't, like, as I said, I didn't have access to music outside of Christian music until I could drive myself. Up to that point, I really was quote unquote protected from the outside world. And so if I had seen someone in Christian music doing that, I don't, who knows what that could have done for me? It might have spared me a decade of coming out. It might have spared me, lots of years of pain or conversion therapy or, making decisions along the way that ended up hurting me. So, that's it. Like that's why it still matters to me and why I'm kind of representing and doing it. But at the same time, I feel like I want, especially with this record, like when I went into writing Church, it was my first chance to write a full length record in Flamey's voice and in, with intention and themes in mind and that sort of thing. The Bible Belt Baby, I love that record, but it also is a thing I kind of stumbled into and came together circumstantially. And I pulled songs that were, 5, 6, 7 years old, and put them in Flamey's voice. So this was the first time I got to write one altogether. And I knew, like, from If You Ever Leave was one of the first songs I wrote for the record, and I knew I wanted it to be the closer. And its message is really just, I mean, you read the kind of the climax, the resolution to that song, and the message is, look, like we should have a higher standard for God than we do. We worship this God that cannot love very well.
No.
The even the even the evangelical God is a
Oh,
terrible,
I so
terrible
agree.
lover. And if I can love better than that God, what is the point? Why would I worship someone that I'm doing a better, my track record at love and being inclusive and bringing people in and celebrating who they are? Like, I'm so much better at that than God. So
Listen,
why am I gonna stick around?
I used to help lead churches, and so hundreds of people, they're singing songs about the love of God. They're hearing sermons every week about the love of God. But when I actually spoke to them on their own, I'd take them for a coffee, I say, you realize at no level do you believe you are loved by God. So this isn't just queer and gay people. This is straight people. They just, all their life, they've grown up singing about how much God loves them and listening to sermons. They're living like functional atheists because they have no grasp or understanding. And one of the things that I find fascinating is in my own, I call them mystic encounters with God. You know, those things you can't really explain, but you just know you've met with God. It's been holy ground, sacred ground. You've heard something. And actually, you put that in one of your songs. You talk about the time you met. Can you say something a bit about that and that experience, the time you met God?
Sure, absolutely. So that's actually the song you mentioned earlier, Hard to See Me Happy. That's probably the most vulnerable I think I've ever been in songwriting, the most intimate, the closest I've got to some really like private moments in my own story, one of which is just a mystical encounter. And really I won't say the one, but certainly the one that stands out the most in my memory as being like, I felt for certain I was communing with the divine, whatever that is, whatever we want to call that. I felt like I was touching, you know, the veil was very thin in that moment. And I was driving in Northern California. I had just been on a little road trip and I was on my way back to Reno where I lived at the time, and was by myself, on a mountain road, and just started weeping. And I wasn't unhappy. I had had a really lovely trip and I was just doing fine, but all of a sudden I just started weeping and had this like deep sadness that just kind of overtook. And I didn't know what was going on, but it got so bad where I couldn't see the road, so I pulled over. and I wish that I some of these details I are still hard to share because I feel like I'm at risk of like outing myself as a mentally unstable person, which, you know, I'm a drag queen, so it's fine.
Don't worry, you're with friends.
But I heard a voice, you know, I heard like it felt like Samuel's encounter, you know, I heard an actual audible voice, and it really freaked me out because I was like, that is not in my head, like that's I hear that. And it said, get out of the car. And I got out and I stood there, and it was February, so I could hear these little like streams rippling in the woods, you know, just snow melt. And the next thing I heard the voice say was, go to the water. And I'm like, well, this is crazy because it's February and aren't the bears coming out of hibernation right now? But I wandered into the woods and I walked to this little creek and I stood there for a second. And then I heard the voice say, get in the water. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to call a therapist when I get back to Reno. But, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. So I took off my shoes and I stood in this mountain stream for as long as I possibly could in my, you know, it was painful. My extremities were hurting. I was in pain. And so I threw myself out of this creek and land in the mud on the side of it. And I'm just kind of laying there in the fetal position, weeping. And the voice finally chimed in one more time. And it said, I was washing your feet. And so I went back to my car where I had a Bible because it was 2005 and I was a very good, you know, Christian worship leader. So I traveled with a Bible and I opened it up to the passage where Jesus washes the disciples' feet. And it's a, you know, a commission story. That was what I took away from that. I was like, oh my gosh, this was my Saul on the road to Damascus moment where I felt like I had a calling, you know, go and do the same is what Jesus says to the disciples. And so I was like, well, I'm here to wash feet, I guess. Right. it's just one of those stories I've never been able to get around.
It's such a powerful story. And there's a saying, isn't there, that the mystics went to the desert to meet with God, but they always come back having met with a lover. And I have felt about those kind of moments in my own life that I have recognized the voice of God because there has never been anger. There's never been judgment. There's never been shame.
Yeah.
And even if I've felt, you know, a sort of rebuke, it has been so loving. And so the tone of it is so kind. Like, I recognize the tone as being the divine. You know, that's the tone of the divine. It is beautiful. It's caring. It's loving. It wants the best for me. It wants, you know, to love me. And it wants for my life to be full. And I just think that that's one of the surefire ways, you know, you've heard the voice of God, you know, from the tone of it. So well, you're a shame slayer. There's absolutely no doubt about your superpower. What do you hope? I guess you've already been answering this a bit, but what do you hope people will get listening to your music and to your story?
Well, I think first and foremost, like most artists, I hope they have a good time. I hope I'm making something that makes people happy and feel good, and even as I make them feel other things as well. So I really want, specifically with this album, with Church, I just want people to consider the trustworthiness of queer folks and our stories. You know, I think that was one of the reactions I got the most after my first album, you know, hit the charts and got all this crazy attention, was just, I just couldn't believe how many people like wouldn't even listen to it, you know, before coming in my comments and my DMs and everything, and just be, you know, just completely trashing me, just completely naysaying all of it because of, you know, whatever their assumption is about who I am and how I look and all of that. I'm just like, we're people just like you. We have these rich lived experiences to draw from as we tell our stories. And I just wish the world, I mean, this is just in general, I guess right now, especially in 2024, you know, at least in America, you know, there's new headlines all the time about how Americans, we just don't trust anything anymore. And that, you know, the proliferation of conspiracy theories and all that. But just when it comes to individual human stories, like, can we just still like stop and listen a little bit? Like, that's what I hope for the most, I think, is that we will just hear and listen and then trust that we're each doing our best to convey what's really going on and what's really happening with and for us. And so I think that's my plea, is that people would learn to trust, at least listen to queer folks, instead of just dismissing us outright.
Oh, well, I really think they will. And I do think that hope is a word I would really, even when you're describing some of your experiences, I think that theme of hope comes through. I think that's why I love it so much. So, you know, I would describe my mission as a bringer of hope to people. That's what I want to do. And I think in part, that's why I have ended up loving your music so much, because hope is such a dominant theme in your music. And, you know, that hope leads to joy, I reckon. So
that's so sweet to hear.
No, honestly, I'm not trying to, you know, flatter you. I just genuinely, my experience of listening to you. How have you coped? And I always ask this of leaders, really. How do you cope with the haters? I mean, are you able to brush that off? Because I have a notoriously thin skin. I hate criticism. I mean, I can deal with it, I suppose, when it's justified. But yeah, you know, I have a thin skin. How do you cope? Like you say, you make the mistake of reading some comments, and there are the haters. How do you deal with that? Yeah. What's it do to you?
I guess I'm very fortunate in that I'm on the opposite end of that spectrum, and I have a notoriously thick skin. Sometimes to the point where I think I can handle things better than I can. And I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not actually taking care of myself in the way I should. But in general, I don't know if you're into Enneagram at all.
Yes, or, I love the Enneagram.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it as well. I try not to like put too much stock in it, but it has been helpful. And one of the takeaways for me, as I've learned about the 8, which is the number I identify the most with, you know, they say about the 8 that we're kind of impervious to criticism from people we don't know, right? Like, if you're an internet stranger, you don't know me. And so why, like, I don't, and I don't know you. Yeah. And frankly, I don't give a shit about what you have to say about me. And really that is the posture I have. And it's genuine and true. When I read those comments online, I'm like, whatever. you're probably a person, you're typing from your basement, like whatever. I'm not worried about you.
Yeah.
But criticism from people who do know us, like, yikes. That's where it can really, really take us down. And that rings very true for me. So I try to make sure that I'm getting, I'm mirroring and reflecting and getting feedback from people in my life who know me well,
Sure.
and so I can, and they also know how to deliver that criticism when it's needed, right? And say like, actually, Flamie, like let's think about this a little more broadly. So, but as far as like that, all of that, the onslaught of like, just right-wing propaganda and podcasts and YouTube videos and comments, all of that, because I definitely experienced my fair share of that in the aftermath of my album hitting number one. All of that was really easy for me to kind of like move through. And one thing I do with it, I kind of have a personal policy. I never interact with a negative comment online with the intention of trying to win an argument or change a mind.
That's wise.
Like, absolutely, like, that's my line. And, but so when you do see me interacting, because I do, when you do see me interacting with them, it's because I've picked that comment as an opportunity to hopefully just pop their balloon a little bit, take a little bit of the wind out of their sails. Mostly so that I can show and demonstrate to anybody else who might be reading, particularly queer kids who may still be in the kinds of environments that I came up in, that these people are not serious and we don't have to take them seriously. Like we can like brush them off. You can play with them. You can like give them a middle finger and keep it moving. Like I really try to just show how frivolous and really stupid all of that is. And so that's kind of how I navigate
Wow,
that.
that's great. And of course, the other incredible thing about eights are, as they say, the once they have a cause, once they feel or see an injustice, you want an eight there with you because man, will they fight for you. So in a way, that brings us full circle back to shame slaying. I mean, you are the person to be the voice for that whole community, and I think
Well,
you are
a
doing that.
voice.
What about
I
a
think,
voice?
yeah, I think a voice. Yeah, like, and I love that there are so many of us now out here fighting this good fight and representing, and because no one person can represent, all of any community, much less the queer community, which is so diverse and so broad. But it is, I feel like it's very cool, and I feel very lucky that I, for such a time as this, have kind of stumbled into a pair of heels, and that I get to be kind of the drag queen doing this work at this time in history. And I'm very grateful, and I see it as a, I do, I see it as a bit of a calling, if you will. And
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm just trying to wash some feet while I'm wearing my own
That's
heels, I
beautiful.
guess.
That's beautiful. And but what's coming up for you? What are you looking forward to? Have you got any projects or collaborations? Are we going to see Flamey with Amy Grant? I mean, is that
I
the dream?
know it's the dream. It's the dream. No, I have tickets to Amy and Vince Gill's show, their Christmas show at the Ryman in Nashville next month. So I'm very excited for that. But no, I don't have any. I really hope that one day I get to meet her. But as of right now, it's, I'm not pushing it. And she knows who I am, and
Not
I've
really.
talked
Oh,
to.
wow.
Oh yeah, I've talked to enough
Great.
people in her team that I know that she's aware, and I think she thinks it's cute, and I'm sure one day it'll happen.
Hey, do you know what? My
But
favorite Christmas album is, of course, Amy Grant's Christmas album,
which
Houseplant.
one?
Oh, the first one. Is it
Tennessee Christmas?
Tennessee Christmas? Oh my gosh. I
See,
love
it's
oh,
it it is it
yeah.
is a classic. It is a classic, but for me, it's actually her second one, Home for Christmas, that is my personal favorite, and
Okay.
it's just because of the nostalgia factor. That's the album that my grandma in South Carolina had
Oh, okay.
when I was growing up, and I would, every Christmas Eve, we'd go down to her house, and I would put that CD on, and so it just
It's
brings up all of that for me. So,
so more than anything else, Tennessee Christmas just says Christmas to us. It just absolutely says. So
it's
here's the point.
wonderful.
When's the Flamey Grant Christmas album? Come
I
on.
Know, right?
Come
I,
on.
I do think about it. The problem is, man, I'm so busy right now. I don't know when you squeeze a Christmas record into all of this, but I do have a lot of touring coming up.
Yeah, it does look like it. I checked out the website and, oh boy, yeah.
That's... Yeah, a lot of touring stateside, but I am hoping to reprise my my trip to the UK and to maybe the Netherlands again, and maybe even some other European countries next summer, 2025. And then... yeah, there's some other things I'm working on.
Okay.
There may be a book that I'm I'm gonna be working on soon if all goes well. We're working on a proposal right now and about have that wrapped up. And I have dreams of writing like a Broadway musical. Like that's a big a dream of mine. And so I've got a little team that's slowly coming together to maybe work on that next year. So you know, there's a lot of different things I would love to get to do and you know, spend whatever little bit of capital I've collected over the past couple of years doing those kind of things would be a dream. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, look, you've been so kind and so gracious to give us this time in what is undoubtedly a hectic schedule. I just want to finish with this question. If you could give one piece of advice to someone wrestling with faith and identity or, you know, self-expression at the moment, at this time, what would you say to them?
Perspective. You know, I think that we are so prone to take things so damn seriously. I know that when I was in the thick of my evangelical upbringing, everything felt so life and death and just even, you know, like momentary decisions of like, oh my gosh, I have to witness to this person right now in this moment, you know, it just all felt so heavy all the time. And I guess I would just challenge you to consider that maybe things aren't that serious. You know, maybe we are the universe experiencing itself, as others have said. Maybe we are, you know, just like if we can pull back a little bit and see that blue, that pale blue dot in the middle of this cosmos, and that we just happen to get to experience, if we're lucky, 70 to 90 years on it in the middle of an infinite timeline, right? Man, just I think it's about joy. I think the point of all this is joy. And so whatever you can do to find joy and to be happy in your brief time, whether that is stomping around in a pair of heels or, you know, climbing mountains or, you know, just hanging out with friends at your coffee shop, whatever does it for you. Like maybe we could take things just a teeny bit less seriously. And I bet I'm betting, and I'm willing to risk that bet that the divine looks at that and smiles and says, "Hey, look at this moment of joy that's happening.
Look at this, and I'm with you."
Yeah, yeah.
Flamey, I wish you every success for the future. Thanks so much. And well, thanks for taking time out to chat to me today, but thanks so much for the wonderful music you're creating, and I wish you well in your shame-slaying career. I really do.
You're so kind. Thanks for having me. This was an absolute delight.
Bless you.
Well, that was Joe talking to Flamey Grant. What a lovely interview. What a hope-filled and joyous interview that
exactly
was.
Exactly like their album. Yeah, it is. That's exactly it. Hope-filled, joyous, moving, profound at times. Yeah. Very profound. Yeah, no, wonderful. Wonderful.
And to come out from those kind of experiences, that kind of background, with that sort of level of positivity is wonderful, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Flamey has a toughness and a feistiness that was absolutely lacking in my church leadership, I feel. I needed to get more in touch with my inner fabulousness, I think, looking back.
I don't know if you do, Joe, really. If I'm honest, I think, you know, I think the level of fabulousness is just about right, I think, Joe. Don't, you know.
Well, thank you.
Let's not gild the lily here.
And not all of us are my Marvel superheroes. I mean,
no, exactly.
You know, Flamey is the shame slayer. There's no doubt about it. It's an open secret.
That's great. But I thought what was interesting is so much of the experience they talk about was sort of resonates with what the podcast is about, particularly that idea of, you know, finding a God who is less loving than you, apparently.
Absolutely.
You know, that your view of God, who doesn't love as well as you do, And I think that's something that we often talk about here, not only because your view of God defines everything about your faith, but also because actually it affects so many aspects of theology, especially, you know, the ideas of heaven and hell and substitutionary atonement, all these kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, so much of our received theology, to me at least, seems to reflect a God who has less love than I do.
It just isn't as nice as your friends are.
Exactly.
I remember our dear friend Dallas Willard used to say, be very careful with your theology. When you've made God out to be less loving than you are, you've got something wrong.
I think that's really powerful and always worth checking out. And the other thing is about listening to people's experiences and validating people's experiences, because I think so much of the church tends to dismiss people's experiences of God because of their theology.
Yeah.
So their theology or their lifestyle or whatever debars them from any real mystical experience. It can't possibly, because God wouldn't talk to people like that, would they?
Well, thank God she is not defined by our theology. That's all I can say about that. You know, and it is true, isn't it? I mean, I have certainly felt, I don't know about you in your sort of more mystic moments of really sensing, you were talking about your retreat the other week, in that sense that God is speaking. You know, it's not just what is said, it is the tone. And somehow you recognise the voice of the divine from that really kind, pure, loving tone. And and that's how I know who's speaking. And it's not just some crazy voice in my head. Well, it might be a crazy voice in my head as well.
Well, yes, I mean, alongside those ones. I think it was great. Thanks for doing it. Such a great conversation. We're very grateful to Flamey for giving their time to us. That was
Thank you, Flamey. It was such a privilege to do the interview with you. It really was,
So we should let people go and do something more useful with their lives. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to everyone who supports the podcast. That's wonderful. And if there are new listeners who would like to fill in a direct debit form,
standing order,
you know, and actually sort of make a real commitment.
And we've introduced dynamic giving recently. So if you'd like to give us £2 a month, that will quickly turn into £50 a month.
It'd be excellent. You can do that from the website. That's wonderful. And we also welcome feedback, comments, questions, inappropriate innuendo, anything, frankly, you want to send to us, because we're that needy. Where would people send stuff to, Joe?
It would be to joe@midfaithcrisis.org. And we love to get your feedback on these episodes. And I'd love to hear what people have to say about the interview with Flamey.
Yeah, brilliant. So we'll be back with you next week.
See you then.